Is it Citigroup's big mistake, or is it dot-com bubble 2.0? Why the $3.5 trillion stimulus package is likely dead on arrival, and those Evergrande bonds we talked about on Monday's show? Well, reports suggest they just entered a technical default. Answer those questions and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. As you'll notice, we're back at the racetrack being the bond king. I told you the horses got a little frightened, but they're back because we've got to talk about not only today's treasury bond auction or note auction, but we've got to talk about what big mistake Citigroup is admitting. They're openly admitting they made, and let's go right into those reports and see what's going on with Citigroup. Now, their head chief equity strategist, Tobias Lefkovich, has issued multiple dire warnings. Now, this guy, if you think I'm bearish or you think some other people are bearish, this guy has issued multiple dire warnings about a euphoria on Wall Street. Now, we're talking about how it looks like 1999 again. And many of you remember what happened after the party in 1999 ended, after that music stopped, where equity prices went. And his year-end equity call for the S&P 500 is 4,000, which is quite a bit lower than it is now. But he's been forced to acknowledge in a note to his clients that he's made significant, quote unquote, mistakes in his prediction. But he's holding to his guns that the S&P will get to 4,000 by the end of the year. Now, this is a big mistake on his part, but let's dig into where this come from. And we've got to go back to June of 2020 to this article here on Bloomberg, where once again, he was warning of equity euphoria at the highest level since 2002. Again, as it notes, take stock, because if you're invested in stocks, you should have something that's hedging your risk or some sort of strategy that's doing that, because you may need that after you see what's going on here. According to Bloomberg, U.S. investors have plenty of reasons to be concerned about the sustainability of the stock market advance. Remember, this was June of 2020, so the market's up even more since then. They don't seem to want to hear them, but Wall Street is embracing the animal spirits at the fastest pace in decades, forcing skeptics to give in or fear missing out on a rally that could lead to a gap in performance they won't be able to close. To Citigroup strategists, including Tobias Lefkovich, the price action is the exact opposite, keyword opposite, of the route in March, where one wave of liquidations triggered a cascade effect. Come June, the bank's panic euphoria model, which we're going to look at here momentarily, which tracks metrics from margin debt, so this is money borrowed to buy stocks, to options trading, which is speculative investing, and newsletter bullishness. So, you know, you subscribe to those newsletters or you read them, it's taking in all the factors of, are newsletters bullish, are investors borrowing money, and are they taking speculative risk with their money to invest, showed sentiment at the most extreme level since 2002. Wait till you see it now. Now remember, this was June 2020 when the tech bubble was dissipating. Positioning may be overly extended, the strategist warns, and investors may not be factoring all the potential risks. Well, we know they're not. Let's take a look over here at his call. This is wrong. It should say 4,000. So he's saying, look, stock prices could go back to where they were at the end of March last year. So March of this year. Now let's take a look at their model. This is the Citigroup Research U.S. Equity Strategy Desk Panic and Euphoria model. And let's look at how it works. Now you see there's two lines, two light blue lines here. Panic. So it's suggesting market panic is above the top line. And euphoria is above the top line, and panic is below. I've got them backwards there. And let's take a look at the other panic euphoria model. This is the live model. So he's saying, look, when we're above this line, it's too much euphoria. Below this line, too much panic. Where are we now? Well, we're way up here at 80. Now let's go back to the dot-com bubble, which is why he's warning that, look, if you're investing in stocks, you're not hedging your risk properly, you could be exposed. Because remember how much the NASDAQ went down? Like 80% after the bubble burst. How many people sitting in retirement can handle that kind of risk? But you see, the panic euphoria model was off the charts then and had not been repeated until now. And you can see every time it gets up to the kind of this top line here, Actually, it's not 80, it's at 1.8. I'm looking at the wrong side. When it gets about 0.35, it reverses, saying there's just too much euphoria. And now we're way up here, suggesting that the market at some point could see a dot-com bubble-like burst. Now, is that realistic? Well, we'll go to this chart here from Kalish Capital that looks at the total market cap of stocks with a price-to-sales ratio greater than 20 times, which is ridiculous. So that means when you are paying for a stock with a price to sales ratio of anywhere near that, well, you're overpaying for your stocks. Well, here you go back to the 1999 bubble, the dot-com bubble, and you can see the total market cap. These are with stocks with a price to sales ratio of 20x, and it was off the charts. People normally did not invest like this, but they did anyways, and now we've eclipsed that. So which brings us back to the original warning is, yeah, he admitted mistakes in his bearish call, but the question is, do you think he's right or wrong? Is he wrong and stocks go higher, or are we really sitting at what looks like another version of the dot-com bubble, whether you look at it from the price-to-sales ratio or you look at the panic euphoria model? It's hard to argue that we're not sitting upon a big, massive bubble in the equity market. Now, before we get into the budget issue, the $3.5 trillion stimulus package, which I'm going to show you is DOA, we need to get into a little of the economic data, because that's where we're going to see the answers to that question of why is it dead on arrival. Let's go right into the economic data. Back to Tuesday, we've got the German view, current conditions. This is survey data based on sentiment. So current conditions up a little bit. That is usually seen as a positive. We've seen in the US, we've seen the survey data head significantly lower, especially on a preliminary basis. And overall economic sentiment coming out of Germany, whoa, big drop from 40 to 26.5. So currently, and why is Germany important? Well, it's a huge, huge manufacturing base in Europe. And so if you see the German sentiment start to go down, well, that's going to flow through the broad Eurozone. So look at that. You see economic sentiment absolutely crashing, kind of mirroring what we're seeing in the preliminary data out of the US. Let's move into to the rest of yesterday's data. We have the three-year note auction, which was one of the strongest in terms of foreign take we've ever seen, one of them in the on three-year note space, showing strong demand from foreign investors. Again, I think this has a lot to do with the standing repo facility that we talked about, that now you can go out and get three-year notes or longer maturity. If you need cash, you can go to the Fed and for 0.25% per year, that's what your borrowing costs are, you can borrow cash directly from the Fed, incentivizing foreign institutions and investors all over the world to buy more U.S. debt. And today's 10-year auction, well, we'll look at that too. But we've got to get into why this $3.5 trillion package is likely not going to happen. First up, we've got mortgage applications. You want to look at what's going on in the housing market. Look where mortgage applications continuing to fall, not much, but continuing to fall, suggesting that even though housing prices are rising, they are likely to reverse as demand goes down. But here we come into the real reason of why the $3.5 trillion stimulus package is dead on arrival, and that is the JOLTS, or Job Opening and Labor Turnover Survey. Now, this is a lagged report. It is for July, but now it shows in July there was almost 11 million job openings. Now, do keep in mind this report does come with a grain of sand, because if you go, say, to a job fair and you speak with someone about a job and a potential employer, that counts as one opening. So if you go and talk to that employer and then I, standing in line behind you, talk to them about the same job, shows two openings. So keep in mind that this report may be exaggerated a bit, but let's go on. And why this matters is here you can see total job openings record. This is all-time high. Never have we ever seen nearly 11 million job openings ever. And you can see the monthly one-month change is spiking as employers are demanding to have employees come, please apply. And here we can see what the issue is. there's about 2.2 million more jobs than there are people on pandemic unemployment assistance. Here you see in red PUA claims. Here you can see total job openings. It's about, so if all the people filing pandemic unemployment claims went and applied for a job, we still have 2.2 million openings. And here you can see 2.232 million more openings than unemployed workers. Doesn't often happen, but this is why you want to now go to the next slide here, which is Manchin backs as little as $1 trillion in Biden's $3.5 trillion stimulus plan. Why is that? Because lawmakers, your congressperson, are looking at all of these open jobs and are going to start asking the question is, why do we need a massive infrastructure bill? Because what do infrastructure bills generally do? Create jobs. So they're looking at this data. Granted, it is government data, but they're government employees. And they're saying, wait a minute, 1 + 1 is not equaling 2. We've got a huge number of job openings. At the same time, we've got a huge number of people on unemployment who we just let their benefits expire on Monday. So if all those people on unemployment go get all of these jobs, we don't need to have a big infrastructure package now, maybe later. And that's the key, is you want to save some of this from, as a, if you're from a policymaker's perspective, you don't want to go and just jam money into an economy when it doesn't really need it. Because the policymakers, again, are saying you can go get a job. There's plenty of them. And the idea is, right, we should save some of this money for later, should we need it as the economy potentially heads into a double dip recession. Let's take a look at what Manchin had to say. Is he has privately warned the White House and congressional leaders. Again, this guy is really powerful that he has specific policy concerns with President Biden's $3.5 trillion social spending dream. And he'll support as little as $1 trillion, although maybe up to $1.5 trillion, some sources closer to him say. And so this is really key. And another one that is in here is he's talking about means testing on other key proposals, including extending the enhanced child tax credit. So he is not, these are what Biden wants. And so he's concerned about them to continue doing this. So there is a lot of skepticism if he does not get what he's looking for, that we're not going to see all this continued government support to all the same people that are getting it today. All right, how about we go on to Evergrande? Now we got a potential bond default building, and here we can see that Evergrande plans to suspend interest payments on loans from two banks due September 21st and asked a lender to wait for instructions about an extension plan. So let's talk about what this means to you and how this would make sense. Let's say I owed you money and I was in a position where I couldn't pay. I come to you and say, hey, I'm not going to be able to pay you, but guess what? I might be able to. I just need a little more time, and I'm going to come back with a new payment schedule, and you're going to accept it because, well, it turns out I owe you a ton of money. Now, what did we talk about on Monday? How Evergrande was dealing with this situation. They were taking their bonds, they were going to the repo market, and they were posting them as collateral, getting cash, taking that cash and using that to pay the people they borrowed money from to make the interest payments. And then as their cash flows caught up to where they needed to be, they could then get their bonds back. And it makes perfect sense. But when they got cut off from the repo market, well, all of a sudden, you start to see some collateral damage from this. And let's take a look at what happened. Fitch downgraded Evergrande and its subsidiaries to double C. Again, what does that mean? Well, it just means that the downgrade reflects our view that a default of some kind is probable, meaning they don't think that Evergrande is going to be able to make these payments. Now, they might be able to play the game for a little while, but eventually, according to Fitch and some other rating agencies, it's likely they're going to default. And we can see that in price of what's going on with their bonds as they head sharply lower. So if you start to think about how this is reminiscent of the great financial crisis, you start to see how this all plays out. That we had a real estate bubble where people could not make the payments on their loan. And so they started defaulting. And of course, what's the first step of default? Is to start missing payments. And you don't officially go into full default right away. And then eventually you do. The more payments you miss, then the bank is forced to default on the loan. So what does this mean from an investor perspective? Well, you'll see investor money pulling out of these type of bonds, not just Evergrande, but they're going to look at companies similar, because what do they think? Hey, if there is rot in this part of the economy, then there's probably rot in other companies like it. So I need to get my money out. So you'll see investors start to pull funds. You will also see investors not be eager to back new debt issuances. Companies may try to go out to the debt markets and get cash by issuing new debt, and they may not do it. And what about banks? Will they be willing to lend or extend really generous terms? Well, they're going to look at this too and say, look, I already know what my risk is. Do I want to take more and have these bonds default? And it is this fear and that transmits into money getting pulled out of sectors where it's needed. And then that's what leads to the defaults and then eventually a financial crisis. Of course, people wonder, is that bullish for treasuries? Absolutely. Let's take a look at today's bond auction while we're on this subject. And we can see here the 10-year treasury note auction was met with strong demand, not the strongest in history, but pretty high up there. High bid to cover at 2.59. What we're really looking at is strong foreign demand. So foreign bidders are taking a ton of U.S. debt, and that's leaving dealers, and this matters, with about $4.6 billion. Now, you say, well, that's quite a bit. Well, not when the Fed is buying about $6.8 billion of 10-year notes a month, meaning the dealers are having to source out in the market, enough to cover the Fed's purchases in their quantitative easing program. And what does that mean? It means downward pressure on yield. So when we start looking at speculative positioning, how hedge funds and other speculators are positioned, you would expect if they're going with the flow of the Fed, they would be buying bonds. But instead, what did we see last week? We saw them come in and short U.S. Treasury. They were long and now they're back short. So again, they're betting against the Fed, who is clearly mopping up supply. And now that the standing repo facility is out, we're seeing foreign demand. Go on to the 30-year bond. We see a little deeper short. So again, people are betting on inflation transmitting into yields, and it doesn't actually work that way at all. With the Fed doing quantitative easing, again, it puts downward pressure, if not outright pressure, down on yields. How about West Texas Intermediate? Perhaps this is a story, could be where the next big rally in the market is coming. Take a look at the energy sector as speculators are backing off crude. And the last time they did that, well, crude prices fell, setting up a potential buying opportunity. So keep an eye on that as speculators back out of the crude market. They're now short on the S&P 500. Thinking it's extended itself too far. Hard to believe that that's true, but yes, it has gone too far. If you're bullish on gold, you should be watching euro futures. Remember, trade weighted dollar, the biggest position, and that is the euro. Speculators are backing off on that, which usually tends to be bearish for gold. If they start to go short, this whole topping pattern, the euro could break down, leading to a big move in the dollar. Now, you would think that speculators would also be unwinding their positions on gold. Nope, they actually took a little bit longer speculative positioning in the futures market on gold. And how about the NASDAQ? They remain about net neutral on that, still very short on small caps, hoping to break this down and make a ton of money on what is a clearly defined topping pattern. As long as the speculators can continue to sell this down, they're fighting the overall trend, but they're holding it. Of course, the almighty dollar's gotten pulled back and looking to break over 94 at some point. If it does that, then all the wheels come off the bus. Speculators or hedge remain long the dollar. Perhaps they're big milkshake theory fans, who knows? And they remain net short on volatility, not worried about any spike higher in the VIX. Well, they probably should be. But anyways, thanks for being fans. Thanks for supporting the show. Thanks for all the likes. Thanks for all the subscribes. We'll be back, of course, on Friday for our regular show, and I'll look forward to seeing you then. I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. Materials not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by selling a security financial instrument or participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity, opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the value of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.